Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You dig it. Holy cow, what a show we have today. Sitting in again in the Durwood Kirby Memorial Chair. Actually, I don't even know if the man's dead or alive, but sitting in the Durwood Kirby Chair.
It's hard to tell, actually.
I was trying to find, there's a Bullwinkle joke about Durwood Kirby, right? Isn't there a Bullwinkle and Rocky gag? Running Durwood Kirby gag?
I don't know if there's a running gag.
It's all right. None of our...
he had his own gag going.
No,
Pete Zaremba here in the Durwood Kirby guest host seat.
Pete Zaremba, the only man old enough to even remember who Durwood Kirby is.
Only living with a pizza named after himself.
Pizza Rumba.
That's right.
But, yeah. that joke is flagging fast, the Durwood Kirby joke, because none of our listeners could possibly know who the fuck he was.
How was the wrestling?
Last night I survived. They told me, go, might break a leg. I broke two legs, two necks, two spines. I broke everything I saw. It was Fighting Spirit Wrestling at a Sunset Park last night. It was absolutely fantastic. You may or may not know, I am the main event. Mike, the main event, Edison, is my new role as color commentator at Fighting Spirit Wrestling. And it was a gas. We're setting it up. Coming on the radio soon. In fact, April 19th, we will feature Fighting Spirit Wrestling with the champ, Ian Aldwin. He's a brute, let me tell you. This guy...
Does he respect his opponents?
This guy doesn't respect anything.
Uh-oh.
This guy's an animal.
That's not right.
This guy's an animal. He's so much of an animal, Zaremba, that he needs two tickets when he goes to the zoo. One to get in and one to get out.
Oh.
He's so ugly. When he was born, the doctor slapped his mother.
That's right. when's the next event coming?
The event is going to be the big Lucha Libre Extravaganza. I believe it's Saturday, April 25th. It's in Queens. We'll be talking about that, and I expect to see you there in Queens. You're a Queens man yourself.
I'm going to be there. On other wrestling news.
The County of Champions.
Sad news. Sad news. El Hijo del Perro.
I saw that.
You saw that, right?
I saw that. He took a fatal blow legit in the ring in Tijuana.
That's right. At the Municipal Stadium, which, once again, for all those people out there who think that wrestling is fake.
Well, let me tell you, cemeteries are filled with its heroes. It's an unforgiving sport.
Right. And it was El Rey Mysterio that delivered the blow in the ring.
Yeah, that's brutal. That's not, it's not quite the same brutal as Ox Baker, who killed many men in Mexico with his heart punch. And it was Mexico, so he got away with it.
This is
something different.
All things, I think, lead to wrestling.
All things lead to wrestling.
Especially
it is
our special guest, because we will discuss the Isle of Malta, home of the Baron Miguel Sacluna, right? Nemesis of Bruno Sammartino through most of the 60s. The island home.
I had no idea.
You didn't realize that Malta was a hotbed of professional wrestling, as was, I am sure, Atlantis, the lost continent of Atlantis. They must have had their own very special brand of professional wrestling happening there.
Well, it is the home of Aquaman, and he wears tight, bright clothing as well.
So we're very lucky to have Mark Adams with us today, New York Times best-selling author of currently Meet Me in Atlantis, featured in today's New York Times. Mazel tov, Mark, and glad
Thank
to
you.
See you.
I actually read the article this morning.
You did?
Yes, I am.
I actually wrote the article.
I know you wrote that article before I could read it. And I have to say, I usually do not read Times travel articles. They usually hurl me into a pit of despondency.
Well, the beauty of
this was a great one.
Thank you.
Well, the beauty of the Atlanta story is it's not quite as accessible as, say, a typical Times feature on, I don't know, Ridgewood. you know, Bushwick. So
accessible. He never found Atlantis.
That's the question.
How inaccessible is that?
Hey, don't give away the book.
Did we find Atlantis? Spoiler alert. Did we find Atlantis?
He's not talking.
I'm not answering.
He's like Klaus Kinski in the final moments of Aguirre of the Wrath of God. Did he find El Dorado?
How many spoilers are you going to give on this show, man?
He's like that guy in The Crying Game who finds out that his girlfriend is...
if one were to look for Atlantis, where might it have been mislaid?
I think your best bet would be to go to the Mediterranean, because probably the number one clue that Plato and everything we know about Atlantis that is legitimate comes from the philosopher Plato.
Everything that's legit.
Right. Well, this is legit.
And there's a lot of non-legit stuff, as Hammer might say. Everything we know that's legit comes from Plato, and he said that Atlantis was located opposite the Pillars of Hercules.
He didn't say which side opposite.
Well, and he didn't specify which set of pillars. Uh-huh. So everything with Plato, you have to interpret it a little bit, unfortunately.
Well, I learned a lot from reading the story text. I didn't know that, for instance, but I enjoyed your peregrinations in search. I enjoyed plate after plate of octopus with you in your story. And
it was a painful research trip, but somebody had to do it.
So tell us, though, because I picture Atlantis, and I picture basically like Aquaman, and I picture this super high technologically superior underwater city, you know, with like hot merbabes, you know, and you know, an Aquaman sort of like swimming around, kind of being handsome in his tights, and like that sounds like an awesome place to go.
Yeah, I think 90% of what we think of when we think of Atlantis comes from pop culture, and especially things like DC Comics, where you know Aquaman goes to the underwater bubble city with its nuclear powered airships and stuff like that. But none of that is actually in the original story. The original story actually appears between two of Plato's most important. Important dialogues. So the placement of the Atlantic story is very curious, to say the least.
Who am I to argue with Plato? I mean, normally in this show, we're talking about Plato's retreat.
Little did we know it was the lost continent of Atlantis.
The children's clay substitute. The clues that he gives all sorts of dimensions, which he gives in stadia, which is a measurement about 600 feet long, like you see in the word stadium. He talks about locations. He says it's near the Pillars of Hercules. He says it's opposite what we now know as the city of Cadiz in southern Spain, although that's up to interpretation as well. He says it's three concentric rings. He says it was destroyed in a grievous day and a night by earthquakes and floods. He doesn't say it sank to the bottom of the ocean, but he says it's under the water, and where it used to be, there's now a shoal of mud where ships cannot pass.
So do we think, are we on board? We think Atlantis, this is happening. Plato was telling the truth. It didn't come to him in a fever dream.
Are you just going to keep asking me to give away the ending of the book?
Meet me in Atlantis. I want to meet you in Atlantis.
Well, where are some of the other places you looked for Atlantis?
Well, I found what happened was it's very hard to get serious academics to talk about Atlantis because it's like career kryptonite. So what I had to do is I had to go meet a guy named Tony O'Connell over in Ireland who runs a site called the Atlantipedia. And he's like a very straightforward, very serious, repository of information about Atlantis on his website. He's got thousands and thousands of articles he's written. So we sat down over there in the least populated county in Western Ireland for a week and over, soda bread and coffee, discussed what the best places to look for Atlantis would be. And we came up with a list of four. And the four were southern Spain, for the reasons I mentioned before, the Pillars of Hercules and being opposite what's now the city of Cadiz, the island of Malta, which Plato says Atlantis was an island city that had great temples and was destroyed by a watery cataclysm. Well, Malta has the Mediterranean's oldest temples, 1,000 years older than even the Great Pyramid of Giza, and was destroyed by a watery cataclysm, we think, around 2500 BC. Third candidate would be Santorini, the famous playground of the rich and famous like Peter Zaremba in the Greek Isles, and it has a unique bullseye shape. Plato said that Atlantis was shaped with concentric rings. Also, we know that there was a horrible explosion there around 1600 BC that basically blew the island sky high and caused tsunamis throughout the Mediterranean.
Which I'm assuming was caused by their nuclear airships that were piloted by Aquaman.
I think Aquaman turned the crystals up just a little too high, and the Justice League wasn't able to get there in time. So they found this ancient city in 1967 called Akrotiri, which seems to parallel some of the descriptions that Plato gives of Atlantis. So there's actual archaeological evidence there. The fourth location, which for reasons I did not foresee people have really latched onto, the New York Post did a big story on this, that Daily News on, or the Daily Mail Online, which aggregates other people's stories all the time, they rewrote the Post story that they rewrote out of the chapter of my book, and then like 12 different languages around the world have rewritten this story. And no one has actually called me or asked me anything about this. They've just rewritten the same chapter over and over. Is there's a guy in Bonn, Germany, an IT specialist, who did a statistical analysis of all the clues in Plato's Atlantis story and zoomed in like a game of Battleship where all the red pins showed up in this one spot on the coast of Morocco.
On the coast of Morocco.
Coast of Morocco.
All right. Well, sounds like good traveling. Sounds like a good search
you didn't
to make.
You didn't go to Bimini.
I did not go to
Did
Bimini.
Did you dismiss that out of hand?
Well, the thing is...
Look, you can pretty much go anywhere. It's like, look, I'm going for Atlantis. And that's clearly not in New York Harbor under the Statue of Liberty. Let's go to Greece.
Well, the thing is, if you're going to look for Atlantis, my thinking is you go back to the original source, Plato. Uh-huh. Plato basically gives us a treasure map. The people who are looking for Atlantis in Bimini and, you know, elsewhere around the Caribbean, they're following psychic readings that Edgar Cayce gave in the 1930s.
That would be the way I'd go.
You know, yeah, I mean, you can choose your own path, but I choose to go back to the original treasure map from the world's smartest man.
Plato. I see. Now, there is a flying saucer on the cover of this book, though.
There is a flying saucer, and I was actually chastised by one of the experts in my book. He said, I like everything about your book except the flying saucer on the cover.
And
it denigrates you.
I think this elevates the whole thing. It makes me want to read this.
That's right.
Because, you know, listen, I'm of the Chariots of the Gods kind of generation. That was a very big deal when that movie came out. And I saw it at the Forum Theater in Metuchen, New Jersey, and whatever.
That is the gateway drug for a lot of people who get into Atlantis. They start out by reading Eric von Daniken and stuff like that, watching Ancient Aliens.
And then want stronger stuff.
Well, and then they start to get into it, and they're like, oh, wait a minute. This is, you know, we're basically eating the fast food when there's a real meal to be had here.
Well, I think the flying saucer is fine. Because, as we said before, it's a sensationalist first. Then you can elevate the discourse later.
Well,
lure them into the book.
Exactly. You got to get people to read first. I mean, I went on the show Coast to Coast. I don't know if you ever listened to Coast to Coast, the overnight show.
I don't even listen to my own show.
With George Noory, you know, and they talk about conspiracy theories and UFOs and things like that. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. But, you know, if you don't reach out to these people and start talking to them about the actual Atlantis story, they're going to be stuck in that von Daniken rut forever.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm... Partially on board with the theory that the government generates its own crazy UFO stories just to discredit the legitimate ones.
It could be.
You know, like hiding in plain sight kind of thing.
You know, there's Area 51. Who knows what's
there? And oddly today, while the New York Times was, publishing your wonderful story in the New York Post, its sophisticated sister publication, there was a story about ancient astronauts and UFOs and how aliens killed Kennedy. And
that would not surprise me.
I'll tell you what, in my travels, I've been to Mexico City and climbed the Pyramid of the Sun and the Pyramid of the Moon. Once you get up on top of that pyramid and you see what's out in front of you, clearly it is a UFO landing field, because there's no other explanation that possibly could be plausible. Clearly, that's what that is.
I can't even begin to imagine what else a flat piece of land could be used for.
Well, it speaks for itself, you know. And listen, let me tell you something. I've been to Cádiz in Spain. I lived in Spain, and that's where the UFOs land. That's if you were in space and you were looking down at the globe, at terra firma here, the class M planet that we are, and you wanted to land your flying saucer. I'm telling you, the peninsula, the Spanish peninsula, would be where I would land.
Well, I think von Daniken said that the cart ruts in Malta, which are also one of the clues for Atlantis because he talks about canals, he said that they were the landing skid marks of UFOs.
It makes sense.
I mean, he give the guy credit. He always cuts to the most sensible explanation for things, right?
Well, it's clear.
He's like a one man's walking Occam's razor.
Listen, it's obvious. Anybody who's like seen those pyramids, anybody who's looked at those little pictographs of like men in flying chairs, they were astronauts, duh. I mean, there could not possibly be any other explanation, and clearly the technology came from outer space.
I got to
bring you back to the Bahamas with this.
All right.
Because
you just like the Bahamas.
He's just trying to segue into a dark and stormy somehow.
Well, we should.
Like, how do I write off this Bahamas trip?
But, you could capitalize a bit with this Atlantis thing, because everyone was talking about, the resort, right?
Right.
And I think you could do a few ads for it, right? You by that big temple. And then, of course, you found Atlantis.
Absolutely.
Here you are, right? I don't know. That might cause some troubles with the Times.
Do you think I could be like the Mario Perillo of
Atlantis?
Of Atlantis.
the guy who wrote the book that finally
Mr. finds. Atlantis.
Yeah, you are. I'm in it. You know, I'm having a ball. You know? You slide down that big slide.
That's right. You know, I'll have a white suit on.
World famous author and explorer. Mark Adams.
I like that. The Indiana Jones of our generation.
It worked for George Plimpton.
Rock star archaeologist.
Right? Here I am.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
You're ready. I can
dig it. Well, you know what it is about archaeologists, Pete?
What is it?
They dig rock.
Okay.
And this being the variety show that's turned into
sort of
this cavalcade of chaos.
The Joe Franklin. It's an island of sanity in a sea of madness.
It is. We're somewhere between Joe Franklin and Carol Burnett. That's where this show lives. But you want to do a song before we take a break?
I think we have to do a song. But don't go away, Adams. We still want to grill you on some of your other books.
I'm ready.
We're going to get to the heart of this. We're going to
get to the point where he's going to want to grill his own books.
Let's do it.
All right, here on Arts and Seizure with Pete Ceramba. Let it roll, Daddy.
Okay. When I first met the little girl, I didn't know what I was doing. Now we're all tied up and my life is ruined. Oh, I'm scared of that child.
Scared of that child.
Now I'm scared of that child.
Well, I'm scared of that child.
And I'm too young to die. She's a cute little girl. She got such a wonderful mug. When she started to talk in her voice, bust a stone jug. Well, I'm scared of that child.
Oh, I'm scared of that child.
I'm scared of that child. I'm too young to die. We had a date, and I couldn't make it. Well, that made her mad. Now I'm looking in her brown eyes. They're greener than grass. And I'm scared of that child. Well, I'm scared of that child. I'm too young to die.
All right, Arts and Seizure, live from Roberta's here on the Heritage Radio Network, Bushwick, Brooklyn, the county of champions. Can you dig it? We're going to take a quick break and be back with Mark Adams, Pete Ceramba. See you in a sec.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
All right, and broadcasting live from the lost continent of Atlantis, we're back on Arts and Seizure with Pete Ceramba and the Durwood Kirby guest chair. You've been spending a lot of time here, Ceramba. You're becoming a regular fixture on the show.
I'm wearing out my welcome. That's the way I like it.
I think it's good. I liked it back in the days when you were mixing new cocktails. You had promised me a hex breaker, a power stance.
I
want a cocktail for every Flesh Tones record, which is, let me tell you, that's a lot of fucking booze.
That is. I meant to ask you, did you see there's a woman at Harvard who was making big coin with her power pose?
No. Oh, with a power pose.
I think we might have a copyright infringement.
Might have an issue, huh?
Exactly.
With the power,
power stance, yes.
Power stance for health.
All right.
Didn't see that coming, did you?
Well, no, I didn't say it. Harvard, no less.
Exactly.
Ivy League in me. What can I say?
It was about time. Pretty soon they'll be making a bid on your archives.
I was going to mix another cocktail today. But you don't want to give away the end of your book. I'm not going to give away the name of this cocktail.
All right.
But I was going to go up against the Dark and Stormy, which is one of my favorites.
That's a bold move.
One of my favorites, but it is actually the national drink of the Bermuda. And involves an ingredient that I couldn't get for this show that you once mocked me. Mr. Mark Adams.
I think you've got the wrong person.
About the ingredient falernum.
But
that sounds like one of those fake elements that they made in a Russian lab in the
elements that they were dealing with down in Atlantis.
Powers the flying ships to Atlantis. So what about the flying saucers and the astronauts at Machu Picchu? All right, let's set the record straight here, because obviously another UFO landing field. There could be no other
possible explanation. Quite frankly,
you know, I wrote the Machu Picchu book.
All right, Dr. Kildare, losing your patience. You know,
you put your email address at the end of the book, and you know, about half the emails you get are like, "Oh, I really liked your book," and half of them are questions like that. You know,
why are you faking that? You know, ancient astronauts did not build Machu Picchu. You know, that's the truth.
I never got to Machu Picchu, but I was in. I went to the one in Ecuador. That's like their best Inca thing. You know, it's up on a mountain. You know. I was in Cusco too.
Cusco is nice.
Cusco, you know, and this thing, and it's true.
Was there a bar there? I'm betting there was.
Certainly. You know what? They had oxygen bars in Cusco.
They do.
Because, and I felt.
That's because ancient astronauts need oxygen.
It's the reverse, you know, of us going to space. You go there, and you need the oxygen.
Well, we have this nitrogen-rich environment, you know, we live in. They need a little bit more, like, oxygen in their octane.
Right? I was in Cusco. You know who died in Cusco is John Peel.
John Peel died in Cusco?
The DJ. He died because he had high altitude pulmonary embolism.
I have to admit that the very night...
He was an ancient astronaut, John Peel.
He might have been.
The very night I arrived there, I was like on that, you know, floor tile hugging altitude.
It's rough.
You're
almost 12,000 feet.
Oh, yeah. Blame it on the altitude.
I was drinking that day, too.
Holding my 12 empty bottles of Cuscania up against my face.
Oh, my God. It must be the altitude.
But it is true. That you can't. I try to fit a knife blade in between those.
That's true.
And you can't fit the knife blade, Mike, between those Inca stones that they have in the foundations that they built.
It's
the Spanish
true.
That proves they had to be aliens or at least undocumented immigrants of some sort.
I agree. There's no other explanation.
I don't know how they do
That's the only way.
Well, I think with Mike.
I think it's also every president has been very coy about the whole alien invasion thing. You know, they're kind of glib and they smile. You know, Obama on like some comedy show late at night. Oh yeah, I'm going to look into Area 51. But there's some. You know, listen. I got to remain agnostic about this. You know, I mean, there's just too much. I mean, like those UFO landing fields in Mexico. It's just too obvious. That's what they're for. So you gotta consider some possibility. And then by extension, you have to ask where they come from and how they got here. And it's obviously very, very far away. So they must be adept at time travel. Because it's the only way to travel those great distances is by folding over space and creating a wormhole. So therefore, that must be possible technology, too. We're just not there.
It's the only way that you could build something like Machu Picchu, especially if you hadn't invented the wheel or
had like a lot of Jew slaves like the Egyptians.
There you go. You know, I see no other explanation. I'm gonna have to redo all my books.
Okay, let's bring him down to earth. Finally, let's pull him out of the heights here.
You've got a copy of my first book here.
I got a copy.
A rarity.
Right here. Mr. America.
Mr. America.
And again, I bought this book thinking it was about Captain America or something.
No, instead,
it was much more interesting.
It's Captain America, Aquaman.
Right.
It's the story of America's first great health guru.
Right. Bernard McFadden.
Bernard McFadden, exactly.
Bernard McFadden. Yep. Wheat germ galore, right?
He started America's first fitness magazine in 1898.
And you say fitness magazine, we're talking about a lot of half-naked men.
Yes, mostly half-naked men.
You wound up at Men's Journal, which
that
I
is.
Also thought was some kind of a decoy...
Run by aliens?
No, not the aliens.
No, it's sort of
like a men's health kind of a thing. You know?
It is. It's similar.
But it focuses more on neckties. And
details.
It's a classier
details
man.
For more civilized definitely. Men.
Exactly. Anyway.
Well, thank you for the kind words about Mr. America.
This is a great book.
I love half-naked men. It is true. Especially when they're rolling around on a mat in a wrestling ring.
Now, this McFadden character actually winds up being sort of the tabloid king of...
He's the tabloid king of New York. He started what's generally regarded to be America's worst newspaper, the New York Evening Graphic, where Walter Winchell got his start, where Ed Sullivan got his start.
Evening Graphic was wonderful.
These are the men that we look up to here on Arts and Seizures.
Yeah,
these are our journalistic heroes.
I know. I found a few copies. It was so awful that the New York Public Library stopped taking it after 6 weeks, so it's very hard to get old copies of it. There's a few on microfilm.
Look, when the New York Public Library calls cut, you know you're fucked.
Yeah.
Okay, this is an organization that has the entire run of Screw magazines.
Well, the front page of
it. All 1,900 copies are available for view at the New York Public Library. But
is that true?
But this rag, no, it is true. Well, Al Goldstein was very good, too, about sending them every issue.
Oh, was he?
He was very, very good about that. And he also sent all to every member of Congress every month as well, every week as well.
So what got you into McFadden's story besides, like, being interested in wheat germ? And,
you know, I was the health editor at GQ magazine back in the late 90s, where I first met you. And on a non-healthy assignment. But I found a stack of old, they're called physical culture magazines from the 1920s. And he's talking about, like, diet and exercise. He's talking about raw food. He's talking about using exercise to avoid heart disease. I mean, he was basically, like, you talk about time travel. He's like a man from the 1980s or 1990s sent back to the 1920s in his
the first
beautifully
metrosexual
sculpted form. He was. Except he didn't like to wear clothes.
He predates Joe Bonomo.
He does.
He got Joe Bonomo, you know, who was at that point was just a stuntman, right?
McFadden found Charles Atlas. He discovered Charles Atlas. And Charles Atlas's exercises
course,
are...
Well, of course, he's your hero as well as mine, Zaremba, because of Charles Atlas, bullies no longer kick sand in our face.
See?
Are you kidding? I feel,
manly man.
I mean, this is what made me the man I am today. Like, Joe Atlas and the dynamic tension also,
exactly.
You know, from the back of the comic books.
And what happened is he ended up trying to run for Senate in Florida, when Florida was an even crazier state than it is now in 1940. And he almost won, except there was some backroom deal that cut him out of the Republican nomination.
Until Florida became that pillar of sanity that we know it to be today.
It was even crazier in 1940.
How come you didn't look for Atlantis, like, off of, like the Florida coast?
You bring it back. Off the coast of Florida.
Because
in Bimini.
You don't go looking where you want it to be. You follow the clues. Right?
I think I want it to be where I want it to be. I'd rather be in Bimini. There's some great bars in Bimini. The end of the world bar.
You're still hoping.
Did Plato talk about cocktails at all in that treatise of his?
He didn't. He said they had a lot of fruit trees, so maybe there was some, you know, sort of daiquiri action or something going on.
And I like that the beaches had, like, blue and red sand. And
they had black,
and the black,
white,
the black
and red
sand,
stone.
Which down in Mallorca and the Canaries, there's a lot of black sand beaches down there. So I believe it. I believe that's where Atlantis. That's what I'd like to believe.
You know, I didn't go to journalism school.
Neither did I.
But I think I know that the next question is, what's next, Mark?
What's next?
What's next?
Having done America's Most Obsessive Health Nut, having done two books about obsessive people looking for lost cities,
yourself.
I think the one thing we can be sure of is that I'm not going to be doing a book about an obsessive or a lost city. Other than that, the world's my oyster.
All right. Well, I want the plans for the nuclear-powered flying ships of Atlantis and also the cocaine connection between Machu Picchu and Atlantis, because it's there. I know it's there.
If I can find it, I'll dig it out for you, Mike. I promise.
Did they have you on a diet of coca tea when you were up in Machu Picchu?
Oh, I ate – no, we would
coca
eat the
tea?
Like coca leaves, chew them like they're chewing tobacco.
Yeah, when I was in Ecuador, it was like the coca tea.
Yeah,
it
no,
was too late. Way too late for me.
Right. They hit you with the coca tea when it's too late. You've already got the headache going.
Right.
But
and it did a funny thing for me. There was all these luscious, crazy fruits that I'd never seen before. And I actually went to the restaurant to have roasted guinea pig.
Yeah, cuy.
Everything was totally, completely without any taste whatsoever for the entire trip.
Because you'd fried
my taste buds with that. You know, it was like I was begging for death. I was hugging the toilet and just begging to die.
It was the altitude.
It was the altitude.
It had to be the altitude.
It was the altitude.
So we're going to go out here on Arts and Seizures. I think you had some sort of recitation, some lyrical poetry that I believe you wanted to share with us. But
You know, it's the quickest 30 minutes. You always say it. I never believe you.
It is the fastest 30 minutes on the internet today.
And Mark,
tell us, though, where we can find you. Obviously, your book is out everywhere where better books are sold.
It's not like Atlantis, right, where you can't find
it. No. This is much easier to find.
What's the good shop in Atlantis like? They have a shopping mall.
There is an Atlantis bookstore in Santorini, so you can go buy it there.
See, I would picture like Atlantis look like outtakes from Logan's Run, maybe.
That's an early 70s movie, and I skipped that entire. Although I did see a movie about Atlantis in the early 70s that was made in the Philippines.
Yeah,
and what's his name? John Constantine, whatever's that? A really third-rate American actor was in it, and he was wearing this. This white outfit included a very short cape and a huge high collar. And I have to say, it made a huge impression on me.
I like that look.
And Atlantis is destroyed at the end of this movie. And there were vampires and zombies in
it. We're going to have to put a huge spoiler alert on this episode.
I hate to bring up a movie that I can't remember the title of.
And of course, Atlantis porn. There's got to be. I mean, if it exists, there's pornography, and that's the rule. So I'd like. Have you found the?
There must be.
So there's your next book. In search of
Atlantis porn.
In search of Atlantis porn.
One wasn't selling bad enough.
I think you're going to do very, very, very well with this book. This big book is bigger than big.
It's big.
Mark, we're so glad to have you on here. But we're going to find you on Facebook, and do you tweet? And
I'm
all
on
that?
Facebook, or look up MarkAdamsBooks.com.
MarkAdamsBooks.com.
He's a swell guy too. If you see him on the street, he's very. Affable and willing to discuss any of these
and
three
very
books.
Very very showing a great deal of patience and forbearance with us, Sarumba.
Very much so. And good looking guy, you can't tell, but we can start up. The continent of Atlantis was an island, Mark, which lay before the great flood in the area we now call the Atlantic Ocean. So great an area of land that from her western shores those beautiful sailors journeyed to the south and North Americas with ease in their ships with painted sails. To the east, Africa was a neighbor across a short sea strait of miles. Down below the ocean, where I want to be, she will be. Way down below the ocean.
Hold on,
Mike, what are you doing?
The Ghost of Atlantis is spoken. Here we go.
And each one of them started with the Donovan song.
Where I want to be,
she I still don't know the words.
Where I want to be, she will be. This has been Arts and Seizures with your hosts, Mike Edison, and co-host Peter Zaremba, with our special guest, explorer Mark Adams. Where I want to be, she will be.
All right, we're going to catch you next week. We got Big Daddy Long Legs coming on next week. Rock and roll. Can you dig it? See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.